and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh people. I'm Robin.
And I'm Nat.
And we are here to have a little bit of a rambling conversation, I think.
I think it probably will go that way, yes.
About Barbie. And not so much about the movie, although we'll touch a little bit on that. But since you and I haven't seen it yet.
As much as we can, yeah. We're going to have a conversation around Barbie, maybe more than about it.
Right, yeah. I think that's definitely more apt. But yeah, I've learned a few things, just thinking about it in the last little while, and have a couple of concepts that we'll bring in to sort of put our thinks on about it. So we'll see what happens. The way that we're going to start off today's program is with a little bit of music, and because everything that I've seen about the movie, anyways, is that sort of the zeitgeist is to dress in pink and, get all your glam on and go to the movie, which actually sounds kind of fun to.
Yeah, that's what the people who I know who are going to see it have been doing. And it, yeah, I'm not sure I have quite enough pink in my wardrobe to make that work personally, but.
I know. I was thinking the same thing because, yeah, I don't really have any. I have a pink and white scarf, which.
Yeah.
Yeah. but I do have a lovely turquoise colored dress that I figure if I ever get invited to a wedding, it's that kind of like 50s style dress that I could, wear to a wedding, which that seems like a good thing to wear to a Barbie movie.
I'm sure you could get away with that. There's probably not super strict enforcement of the Barbie dress code.
No, and she had quite a wardrobe, as
she very much did,
as a doll. So anyways, we're going to start off the show with a listen to Janelle Monáe and the song Pink here on Intravenous.
Yeah, so like that. Maybe pink like the skin that's under. Baby pink, where is deepest inside? Crazy pink beyond forest and dice. Pink like the secrets you hide. Maybe pink like the lid of your eye. Baby pink is where all of it starts. Crazy pink like the holes of your heart. So here we are in the car, leaving traces of us down the boulevard. I wanna fall through the stars, getting lost in the dark is my favorite part. Let's count the ways we could make this last forever. Sunny, money, keep it funky, touch your top and let it down.
Janelle Monáe on Intravenous with Pink to start us off on our Barbie journey today on Intravenous. During the song, I was just relating to Nat that I've learned a lot about the sort of history of Barbie, and I had no idea until, you know, all of the hoopla with this movie started taking over my social media feed, and everywhere I look, it's everything about Barbie. But I had no idea that she, as a doll, was created by the American businesswoman Ruth Handler, because Ruth witnessed that her daughter, Barbara, as a small child, played with paper dolls and played with other dolls and often gave them these adult roles. And it's tricky, I guess, to try to give an adult role to, like, your baby doll.
Yeah, children have wonderful imaginations, but there are some limits.
Yeah, and you know, even with paper dolls, sometimes they're teen-ish, mm-hmm. but not adult dolls.
Yeah, I was quite surprised that this, you know, adult dolls just kind of want a known thing in the U.S. at this time. I guess this would have been the 1950s, maybe?
I think it says 50... Well, the doll itself was launched in 1959, so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole process of, you know, figuring out that she wanted to have this adult doll made and...
Happened to have...
You know...
Over the course of the 50s. I just thought that was so interesting because it feels like quite an intuitive thing that, you know, the way children play in a lot of ways, it kind of alludes to, you know, the kind of things they expect they'll do when they grow up. And, you know, playing is kind of a learning process as well, right? And that includes, you know, dolls. So it was kind of just a little interesting and bizarre to me to imagine that that was such an unfilled niche, because it seems so it seems so natural, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, it was still probably in the 50s where, you know, that idea of children should be seen and not heard, though, was still part of, you know, how we as a society were raising kids, and not really thinking of them as these independent thinker little humans, until they were 18, 16, yeah, until they could work, you know, as little producers. Mm-hmm. In the capitalist system. So, hard to kind of understand for me, what perhaps that time might have been like, even though I'm not far behind in some ways.
I definitely think the way that children play and the kind of things that children play with and do, it definitely says a lot about the kind of society that they live in. Because, you know, children will always play, and I feel like it really, a lot of the time it's imitating adults in, you know, certain ways. So it's kind of, it really mirrors the kind of, you know, what children are expected to become when they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Or what they can't become. And it's limited to, you know, something you can play at but can't really do.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that Barbie really kind of straddles that line, right? Like, she was in both doll form but also in sort of metaphoric form, this idea of what those very strict role models were, but also, you know, she was this independent, she didn't need anybody, she had a beautiful wardrobe full of clothes, she had her own van, you know, her own little fold-out apartment.
I mean, you know, you really can just kind of project anything onto these kind of dolls, which I think is part of the enduring appeal. You know, it can change with time, and society certainly has changed, but I think Barbie is still a very successful endeavor for Mattel.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Just looking up here, one of the things that really struck me about the sort of, you know, as we're talking about play, and play involves a lot of storytelling and that kind of thing. And one of the things that sort of triggered my idea that you and I should have a conversation about Barbie was something that got posted by a friend of mine on social media, and it quoted this article or this essay that was written by Ursula Le Guin. And now I'm just trying to find where the heck it is.
Yeah, I think the essay by Ursula Le Guin is called "The Carrier Bag Theory of Fiction," which I've had time to skim, not thoroughly read through, so I'm not sure I could give a fantastic synopsis. But I think it's her kind of trying to lay out what she does as a writer, and what that can say about, you know, kind of what it is to be human compared to different ideas of what that is. You know, she talks about these kind of heroic adventure stories of, you know, going on the quest and killing the dragon and those kind of things. And then compared to something that's maybe a bit more human, a bit more life-giving and sustaining, maybe.
Yeah, there's the thing I was actually looking for is a specific sort of piece here that just sort of encapsulated the whole idea of how those stories that are like the hero's journey story versus the I don't even want to call it the heroine's journey, but you know, that there's this difference between the way that we gender story and that that matters so much in terms of how we come to understand ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, storytelling is, you know, a lot like play in that it's something that sort of mimics or mirrors the lives we live, that, you know, tells us and helps us imagine the kind of lives we'll live, but also, you know, kind of shapes what we think is possible. You know, because, you know, children grow up playing and hearing stories and acting them out and these kind of things. So the kind of stories we tell and the way that we play, you know, really does reflect not only what we can do now, but also it shows what we think is possible, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I really like about the essay that Le Guin writes here, The Carrier Bag Theory of Fiction, is that she kind of turns the idea of evolutionary theory in a way on its head, because, you know, the air quote male story is that you know, man struck out and he had a bone and it was a weapon and he conquered and all was fantastic in and because of that, whereas the carrier bag theory of fiction suggests that the story begins in the womb, right? In that carrier bag that exists inside of half of the population and is the whole incubator for humanity. And without those places that are like these wombs, whether they be our homes or the baskets that we, you know, collect berries into, or the handbags that carry all of the things that sustain our lives during the day. I remember my grandmother's handbag. It must have weighed 50 tons because she carried not only her own stuff and probably residual things from her kids and then her grandkids, but also her husband's things. And, you know, like we carry all of the things. And that those items into and of themselves might not be that interesting. And in fact, you know, in the Le Guin essay, she kind of mocks herself, you know, telling the story of how, oh, when we picked this berry and, oh, then we picked another berry and, oh, and then there was another berry.
But, you know, that's what life is like, you know. You pick one berry after another and then you've got a bag of berries and you can share it with your friends.
And it will sustain you over time and consequence and...
Yeah, no, I definitely think you could say, you know, there's so many different storytelling traditions, but maybe the one that we kind of have come up in, you know, in the West, in North America, is not one that pays a huge amount of attention to that kind of, those kind of wombs or bags or, you know, the kind of things that sustain life and let life happen. There's a lot more focus on, you know, the killing the mammoth and this kind of thing, which is, you know, I mean, it's exciting, but, you know, that's, it's something about the kind of end of life, you know, that there's sort of a push towards death there almost.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, and just again, to reiterate, I haven't seen the movie. And, you know, there's all kinds of spoilers out there on social media. So I don't think this is a spoiler. But one of the things that I find a little curious is that apparently the beginning of the movie begins in much the same way that that Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey starts, you know, kind of at the dawn of
everything.
Of everything, you know, and they find, you know, in Kubrick's movie, they find,
you know, a femur or a, you know, something like that. And it's kind of the first tool. It's this sort of long thing used to, you know, club or chip away at rocks or something like that.
Yeah. And in the Barbie movie, they find Barbie. And so, you know, it's this, it's this play on story almost.
But also, I mean, not to maybe give it more than its due, but it is in a way a different story about what it means to be human. And that's what Le Guin's piece is talking about as well. It's a different, because, you know, it's a different place of where do you want to say, you know, where did the important things, you know, where did we become us and what was it that made us us?
Yes. Oh, I like that.
And, you know, you could start it with the, you know, the clubs and the chisels, or you could start it with a bag or a doll or something to play with, something to keep other people safe and be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of the criticism of the movie that I've just, you know, heard in conversation is that, you know, and I'm, again, air quoting, men don't understand it because it's not that story that they understand, where we find the bone, we club someone, and, you know, obviously this is generalization, and I, you know, men don't all act like that.
Fortunately, there is not a huge amount of bone clubbing and chiseling today. I mean, I'm sure in some quarters, but
there is this gendered idea that's the way that it works, right?
I mean, it's still, the stories we tell to boys is different to the stories that we tell to girls in a lot of ways, you know.
Yeah, and so the criticisms that I'm hearing is that they don't understand. They don't understand the movie. They don't understand why maybe it's important, or that it's important that we get to tell these other stories, and that is the whole idea of it, right? Is that we do experience life in our own unique ways. And unless we all have a chance to tell what that story is to us, we don't fully get to appreciate what the dynamics of life look like.
I mean, that's, you know, one of the great powers of storytelling is that it can show you a life that you haven't lived. and a world that you haven't been to, you know? And that is always, you know, because I've been saying, you know, the stories sort of reflect what we live in or what we imagine. But, you know, there is also a wonderful kind of cross-pollination in storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I want to pause for another song break and have a listen to it's on the soundtrack for the Barbie movie, and it got sent to me as a press release, which is sort of the first thing that led me down the rabbit hole of, oh, right, there's this Barbie movie. I'm usually really unplugged from what's happening out there in the pop culture world, and all of a sudden I'm swallowed up in this phenomenon, which is kind of hilarious.
It has been uniquely all-consuming of things in recent years, it feels like.
Yeah. And I mean, I played with Barbie. I loved Barbie as a kid, and I remember at when my parents sold the house where I grew up, and they moved into their new house where they would, you know, live forever after. I had this little round suitcase full of, I think there was three Barbies, and just, you know, tons of clothes and accessories and all of the Barbie things, and it was at the garage sale, and I just remember the absolute glee on this little girl's face when she got that little suitcase full of Barbie and Barbie things for steal of a deal, probably $5, maybe less in those days. But just the excitement on her face when she got to take that away. But back to Billie Eilish. the title of the song is What Was I Made For? And it kind of left me feeling like, oh, wow, there's this lack of sort of confidence or surety about this character that Barbie thinks that she is. Like, she doesn't know, which is kind of reflective of how most of us, especially in the age maybe when we're playing with Barbie and just trying to figure out, like, who are we in this transition period between being a kid and what we might be as an adult? Like, what the hell were we made for? So it was quite beautiful. Just to watch the sort of struggle and the process. So we're going to hear that song now, right here on Intravenous.
I used to float